MacCast, Tuesday, June 4th, 2013. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. I got a great show for you this week. Actually, two shows for you. We're going to split this one into two parts because I did a ton of great interviews with a bunch of smart folks from the Mac podcasting community. And the genesis, or sort of the idea for this whole episode, came to me when I was sort of reading through all the latest news and information in the lead up to Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. What happens is there's a lot of speculation and there's a lot of rumor, a lot of people trying to figure out exactly what Apple is going to show off, what they're going to announce. We're hearing about new MacBook Pros, the new interface on iOS 7, things that we might see in Mac OS X, and that's all fine and great, and we're going to see a bunch of great things. But what I really wanted to know was, what do we care about? What do we want Apple to be working on? What are the things that we want to see, regardless of what Apple's actually going to announce? I mean, we know they're going to announce these great things, but really, what do we think they should be working on? So I'm going to make this episode a little bit more selfish. It's about us, right? It's not about Apple. It's about what we want. And that's the tact that and approach that I wanted to take. So I got a bunch of really smart folks on the line, and I asked them all the same question. And that was, if you were in charge at Apple, if you were in Tim Cook's shoes, and you had had the last year to get your engineers, your talented people working on something, what would that thing be? What would you be hoping that they would be working on? And this is not, again, a prediction of what we're going to see at WWDC. This is a lot about what is in our gut, what are the things that on a daily basis maybe are frustrating us, what are our hopes and dreams for what directions Apple might be moving in, and it's all purely speculative and just out there, and a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing these interviews, and they ended up being very insightful, and I do think give a broad scope and picture of what the community, those of us in the community, think Apple should be focusing on. And I think a lot of it you'll find are things that Apple is probably focusing on. Now, when they're actually going to pull these different elements together and release stuff, that's a whole different story, but that's not the story we were going for. So I hope you really enjoy this episode and also the follow-up episode. I'm going to be giving you another batch of these interviews at the end of the week, and part of the reason for that is next week there is not going to be a show. I am taking vacation. It's my yearly camping trip. I go up to the central coast of California and just spend some time decompressing. And for whatever reason, no matter what I do, it seems to fall on the week of WWDC. We've kind of moved it back and forward different weeks, and Apple seems to be in sync with my vacation. So add your own conspiracy theory there, but I will be off next week. I might chime in. We'll see, depending upon how big the announcements are at WWDC, I might try and chime in with a couple comments, but overall, I'm going to be just taking it easy and taking a break before the summer kicks off. And so that's what's happening right now. But before we get into that, I want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Gazelle. You know, there's a couple things that I really like. I like cash, and I like things that are simple and easy to use. And Gazelle has both those things covered. If you want to sell an old device, an old iPhone, an old iPad, maybe a Mac, maybe an Android smartphone because you want to buy a new iPhone, you can do that at gazelle.com, and they make it super simple and easy, and you can get cash for your old stuff. So before you buy new hardware, even if you've already upgraded, you can sell your gadgets online at gazelle.com. And they make it so simple and easy. It's completely hassle-free. It's risk-free. You don't have to worry about using things like online classifieds or auction sites. You can just go to Gazelle and get an upfront offer for cash. And it's a great thing to do, even if you don't take advantage of the Gazelle offer. You have nothing to lose. Just go to gazelle.com, find out what they'll give you for your old gadget. You just go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. You answer a few questions about the condition of your item, what kinds of accessories you have. They'll even buy broken devices and pay you cash for those. And then after you finish all that, you hit submit and you get a risk-free offer. They'll tell you what they're offering you for your device, and you can lock in that offer for 30 days. And that 30 days gives you time to think about it. Don't have to worry about seller's remorse. And in addition, if you want to take that cash that you're going to get, buy your new device before you send the old one in, you can do that as well. They give you time to do it. And then once you send in your device, they will pay you fast by check or by PayPal. So you're going to want to go. You're going to want to do it today, because every day you wait, your gadgets can lose value. So go lock in your 30-day offer, and then they'll pay shipping and, in some cases, will provide a box for you to send your item in with. So it could not be simpler, and you can get cash for your stuff. So sell your used iPhone, your iPad, your Mac today over at gazelle.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So now let's dive into the interviews. We talk to a bunch of folks, very smart Mac folks, about what their hopes are for the future of Apple and where they might be heading. And if we were in charge of WWDC, then these are the kinds of things that we would have had Apple's folks working on. So I have Peter Cohen now from The Loop, actually executive editor of The Loop, co-host of the Angry Mac Bastards podcast, and just recently joined iMore as their managing editor. Well, congratulations on that, Peter. How you doing?
I'm tired, man. I'm ready for a nap.
Yeah, you're busy like all of us. So what we're doing here is just I'm trying to find out, leading up to WWDC, we have it coming, a little bit of a more selfish question I'm asking everybody, which is, you know, if you were running the show and you were able to put one thing into that keynote, what would be the one item that you would really want them to announce?
Well, I don't think it's any secret for anybody who reads my stuff over at iMore that I am champing at the bit for a new Mac Pro.
Yeah.
You know, I am a big Mac Pro enthusiast. I have a 2008 model that has served me very well, but that is getting quite long in the tooth now. And I, you know, people have poo-pooed the Mac Pro. They've said that it's, you know, it's a relic of another era of computing, and that we're in a post-PC world now. And, you know, the iMac does everything the Mac Pro does. It's all lies. It's all horse pucky.
Yeah.
If you actually take a look at Geekbench stats, the Mac Pro is the top performing Mac. Like, the top six or seven top performing Macs are Mac Pros going back to 2010. It isn't until the seventh spot that the most recent generation iMac hits it. So in terms of raw computational power, the Mac Pro is still where it's at, and it's still got a great life as a machine that's being used in science and research, and a machine that's being used in digital video production and digital audio production and all this really cool heavy iron stuff that I want to see Apple continue with. And, you know, people argue that, well, Apple's a consumer-focused company. You know, the Macs are a sideshow.
Right.
That's true. You know, in terms of their balance sheet, Macs
right.
are a sideshow. But the Mac Pro is still a cool piece of machinery that I want to see continue. I want to see it redesigned. So blue skying, Adam, I think that right. I would like to see a redesigned Mac Pro, something really cool and cutting edge, you know, that still has the expandability, that still is focused on just raw horsepower and performance and reliability. And, you know, something that can crunch, you know, numbers like a supercomputer all day long without overheating, but a cool expandable piece of heavy Apple iron is what I want.
Yeah, that's something desperately needed. Do you know, there's that famous sort of quote, and I always, it's funny because people always want to point to say, well, Tim Cook said we're getting a new Mac Pro, and I don't think that was actually the thing that showed up in the email. It was something to the effect, and I'm not going to get the exact quote, but we have something coming for our Pro customers in, you know, the next year, and this was last year, so alluding to sometime this year. So we're expecting to see something. Do you have a sense, why do you think Apple hasn't delivered something so far? I mean, do you get, like, I'm the same as you. I'm chomping at the bit. I'm like, why have we not seen this new machine yet?
Well, I think it's because, you know, the architecture of the Mac Pro is based around Intel Xeon server hardware. And Xeon server hardware is in serious need of an overhaul. Yep. You know, Intel just introduced its first Xeon chip based around the Haswell microarchitecture that I think we're probably going to see some Macs based around out of WWDC as well. I'm fully expecting that Apple is going to refresh its laptops and that we're going to see some machines with Haswell chips. If we don't, I would be very surprised. But the problem with the Xeon-based Haswell chip is that it's designed for really low-power microservers, like cloud servers or, you know, the Intel versions of Mac Minis being used as servers.
Right.
And that's not really the kind of silicon you want to see inside of a Mac Pro.
Right.
So the architecture that Apple is using, the microarchitecture that Apple is using inside the Mac Pro is very dated in terms of the features that we've come to expect, like Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 and some of those other funky things that you get with that, because that all came as a result of Apple using Ivy Bridge based microprocessors in the designs of the Mac Mini and the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro and the iMac. However, in the third quarter of this year, Intel is going to be introducing a new Xeon chip that's based on the Ivy Bridge architecture. And that one, I think, is the one that we're going to see for the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
And that, you know, so it would be possible for Apple to show off a new box next week and say, this is the new Mac Pro that you've been waiting for, but you're not going to be able to get it until later in the year. And that may have been what Tim Cook was talking about when he said something for pros later in the year. But he could surprise us and come up with something totally different, you know, something radically reimagined for a Mac Pro. Because let's face it, the box that the Mac Pro comes in, this is a 10-year-old box right, design.
It's the Power Mac G5, right?
Yeah, the Power Mac G5 was introduced in 2003. I can't think of a single product in Apple's entire product line, with the possible exception of the iPod Classic, that has retained its basic form factor for as long as the Mac Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your sense of, I mean, I kind of feel like it's going to be something very radically different on the design side as well as just functional side. I mean, I've had conversations with people that say, you know, what if it's some sort of, you know, almost modular system? Because you want it has to have the drive expansion, right? You have to have room for all those drives. But maybe with Thunderbolt, they can do some different things in terms of, you know, not needing the kinds of graphics cards or doing expansion some other way. I have no idea, but I get the same sense that when Apple gives us a new Pro machine, a new Pro system, whatever we want to call it, it is going to be just mind-blowingly different than what we have right now.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice? I agree with you about the internal expansion. You know, the SATA expansion of the Mac Pro is one of the great things about it. Like my Mac Pro, I've got a 3-terabyte drive that's sitting in there that's doing nothing but Time Machine backups for the other ones.
Right.
You know, and okay, of course, this isn't the safest idea in the universe. If, you know, the power supply blows in the Mac Pro, I could, I guess, you know, eat the hard disk. Or, you know, if my house burned down, I'd be screwed. But the bottom line is, no other Mac in Apple's product line has that sort of internal expandability. No other Mac in Apple's product line has the sort of memory expandability that a Mac Pro has. Mac Pro can accommodate up to 64 gigabytes of RAM. That's twice as much as the 27-inch iMac.
Right.
You know, so you and not only that, but it's error correcting code, ECC RAM. So it's RAM that doesn't screw around with any kind of data corruption whatsoever. It's the kind that, that people who are doing massive computational stuff on these things need. And it's the only machine in Apple's entire product line that's like that. So, you know, I think that Apple can certainly take some things away from it. Like I made the argument on an iMore editorial recently that we could really live without the optical drives. Because, and that's a design aesthetic that we've seen Apple pretty much scan across the entire product line now, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, what would stop a Mac Pro user from buying an external Blu-ray, which some already do, or an external Super Drive if they needed to burn CDs and DVDs? Nothing. Right. You know, but having that internal expandability would be great. I don't think with Thunderbolt that you would need all the PCIe internal expansion that you've got. And especially if it were updated with Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 and so on, then you could get rid of maybe one or two of those slots and shrink it down a little bit. I still think that it needs to have a discrete graphics card, if for no other reason. Yeah. Then ever since 10.75, and this is something that not a lot of people realize, ever since 10.75, the Mac Pro has been able to use off-the-shelf PC graphics cards from NVIDIA. You can buy a bone stock NVIDIA graphics card off of your favorite online supplier and install it, and the Mac Pro will recognize it with the system drivers and will make it work. Now, it's wonky. You don't get the boot screen because, you know, these cards don't have extensible firmware on them, but it works. And it's a way that people like me with, you know, my 08 Mac Pro, that NVIDIA GeForce 8800 graphics card has seen better days, and it's below the system specs of some of the software that I'm running. I threw a GTS 450 in there, and it runs like a champ, and it's considerably faster than what I had in there before. And it cost me like $80.
Yeah. See, that's the key to the Pro system, right? And those two factors, two of the things that you talked about, one, the expansion, right? And the other one being the sort of it has to have those latest really beefy processors in there. Added to the fact that, like you said, the benchmark scores on the 2010 one are still beat out most of the stuff Apple's beating today. I think that might be part of the reason a lot of people complain, well, it's been so long since they've updated it. Well, it had so much raw horsepower in it that they could almost, in a way, get away with it, right? Because it's still the fastest Mac they ship. So I think that's okay, but it's certainly gotten long in the tooth after, you know, not being updated for three, going on 4 years now, I think we're at, right?
Yeah,
so it's time.
So it is definitely time. And, you know, I think that if all Apple does is change out the internals and give us Thunderbolt and USB 3.0, there's going to be some people out there that are going to be like, that stinks. But
there will always be those people no matter what.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right, Adam. No matter what you do, people are going to be disappointed, right? Apple's damned if it does and damned if it doesn't.
But, yeah, I'd like to see a new design in that thing, though. In addition, if they upgraded all the internals, that would be awesome and brought it up to date and put in those new Intel processors that are coming out. Fine. But I think it's going to be bigger than that. I in the back of my mind, in my gut, I feel like it's going to be bigger than that.
Maybe they could make it a cube. Oh, wait, they tried that once, didn't they?
Great.
Well, point. You know, if it was an aluminum cube, it would be, you know, better.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe it'll just look like a Next.
Yeah! That'd be awesome. Oh, my God.
Big obsidian black Borg-looking thing.
That would be killer. I would love that. I would so love that. You know? I would so love that. The other thing that I think, if I were like Tim Cook, if I were CEO of Apple, the other thing that I would love to do would be to introduce a new Apple TV and tell everybody that, you know, I'm introducing a new Apple TV and have like this big shrouded rectangle on stage that looks like I'm about to unveil like this 50 or 60 inch flat screen wonder and then pull it back and it's just another tiny little black box sitting there on the table. You know, just as kind of a, I don't know, a thumb in the teeth to Gene Munster.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to have to get you back on and probably talk more about the Apple TV sometime then. But I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this one. I know I'm asking people to kind of just dream for a little bit And this is going to be fun. So I'm curious to see what others have to say. But thanks for coming on. I already mentioned where what you're up to, but you want to tell people where they can find you and sort of follow along with what you're doing these days?
Sure. Yeah. You can find me over at iMore, where I'm managing editor, and iMore.com, and The Loop at loopinsight.com, and our new magazine on the iPad.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Which you can find on newsstand. And also, my podcast is angrymacbastards.com, where I'm co-host. Be warned, we work blue, so if you don't like potty mouth humor, stay away from it. But otherwise, it's a lot of fun. We take the wind out of the sails of really bad Mac punditry every week. We're kind of like the Macalope, only on really bad bathtub crank.
Great description and great show, by the way.
Thank you.
And so thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So now I've got Bart Buschatz from the International Mac Podcast and also a co-host on the Mac Roundtable, which I'm on occasionally, but I think, Bart, you're on a little bit more than I am.
Maybe if you take an average, that's true, but past, I haven't been very good in 2013. I need to get better about that.
Yeah, we have a lot of people, folks on that podcast, which is why, so we can all kind of jump in as our schedules allow, and it's a great show, and people should check that out. But I have you on today. I already kind of let everybody know what the question is, but we're talking about WWDC coming up. Rather than talking about rumors and speculation that we've heard of, I want to know, if you were in charge, what would you have had the engineers working on? What do you want to see coming out?
I think sort of the one word answer would be software. iWork is stale, to put it mildly. I mean, it was great when it first came out, and I mean, I haven't purchased a copy of Microsoft Office in a very long time, and I'm a happy iWork user, but it really feels like the product of the days before the iPad. So it works nice on the Mac. It's actually quite good on the iPad, which is kind of cool, but the union of the two is just missing. I mean, it's possible to do, you know, to create a presentation on your Mac, tweak it on your iPad, tweak it a bit more on your Mac, tweak it on your iPad. But it's not pleasant because it's always throwing up conflicts and going, I'm going to change this font on you and I'm going to change this on you. Oh, you used that theme. No, you should have used this theme. There's just no joined up thinking at all. And I think really what's most needed and what I really would like to see is just both the Mac and the iOS versions of iWork reworked in harmony with each other, instead of you do one bit and then you do another bit. Just reimagine all of it as one sensible unit that all works together. And while you're at it, do iLife as well.
So it sounds like software, but more on the integration side, sort of the seamless transition back and forth between the two, which in essence, as you're talking about it, I'm thinking about Mac OS X and iOS, and we kind of saw that a little bit with Mountain Lion. So is it that sort of thing that you're thinking of?
Definitely that sort of thing. And also, finally make iCloud actually work like you promised on day one. That would be great, because the theory is fantastic. You know, you work on the Mac and you move straight over, but it just doesn't work like that in real life. It's actually quite clunky and unpleasant, and that's not an Apple-like experience. So that really needs to be smoothed over and to be a lot more seamless and pleasant to just go from one device to the other. I really want a Star Trek world where it doesn't matter what computer I'm sitting at, my stuff is just there.
Right.
Tweak on my little pad, and then I wander up to the bridge and I sit down on my giant big workstation. I tweak a bit on that, and I end up in a shuttlecraft somewhere and I tweak a bit there, and then I go give my presentation Starfleet Command or whatever. I don't want the computing device to be all that important. I just want my stuff to magically be there. And yeah. I want it all to work nicely.
I think a lot of us want that. Now, specifically with iWork, do you have specific iWork apps that you work in more than others, or do you find yourself kind of evenly distributed across, you know, Pages, Numbers, and Keynote?
I use Numbers a lot, but only on the Mac. So that's not one I'm all that stressed about, because it works fine on the Mac. But the one that I'm always floating between iOS and OS X on is Keynote. Because I'm involved in a few societies and things, and I'm asked to give presentations from time to time. And, you know, I'll be tweaking them all the time. It's not pleasant. It just really, I mean, I end up going and Googling what themes are compatible across the board, and then you'll find, say, well, if you use Chalkboard, it's mostly okay, but it's going to convert this font to that font. And you do it once, and it says, make your conversion. Okay, fine. And then you go the other way, and then the other one wants to make its conversion again. And it's just not an Apple experience. It's
Yeah. You would think if they're not going to do something like make sure that you can embed those fonts, or, you know, technically there's many ways they could probably approach it. But you'd sort of think, at the very least, why couldn't they have a mode in on the Mac side that just says, put me in iPad mode and only show me the things that are going to work. You know, like, only show me the themes that'll work with iPad. Only let me see the fonts that'll work with iPad. That would be the simplest approach. But I'm thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, the way I would want it is them to broaden the support that they have now and do something like that as well.
Yeah, there shouldn't be this concept of an OS X theme and an iOS theme. There should be a Keynote theme.
Right.
And all of the themes should work on all of the devices, and that should be the end of that.
Yeah, yeah. What about sort of, did you see this kind of going both ways, and not just making the iPad more compatible with Mac, but the Mac? Like, I don't think the Mac versions have the kind of cool, some of the gesture things, and there's some interesting things that happened on iOS, going back to this sort of idea where they've let OS X and iOS sort of borrow and take features from each other. It seems like they should be doing that in the software side as well, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and like you say, they did it very well with OS X in the last release. And I know there were a lot of pirate users panicking, oh my God, it's going to be the end of OS X, they're going to dumb it down. They didn't. I mean, the terminal even got a lick of paint. And rumor has it the terminal's getting another lick of paint this time around. I mean, I am as geeky a user as you get. I spend my time shell scripting and all sorts of things. OS X has not been dumbed down. But it ties in so much nicer with iOS now, and there's a unified sort of language between them. It's not address book on one and contacts on the other. It's contacts everywhere.
Right.
And you just get the impression that the same people are involved in both, and that it's from the same company with the same ideas, and it's hanging together. And you just get the impression that there are two completely isolated teams that never speak to each other and, like, hate each other or something, making the iOS version of iWork and the OS X version of iWork. And I just want one team to build. I mean, it's been, how long has it been? 5 years?
Yeah, well, on the Mac, it's very long in the tooth. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it seems like they've been working and focusing mostly on, and we've gotten steady iOS version updates, but really minor things, nothing major.
Yeah, so hopefully what they've actually been doing for the last 2 years is that there's been a single team sitting over there somewhere quietly, not releasing anything to the public in the great Apple way.
Right.
And they've been making a new unified version of iWork, and they're going to spring it on us in a few days' time.
That would be very nice. So to kind of just finish it up, we talked about this whole integration thing and making it a little more seamless. Are there any specific features that you found, like feature enhancements that you'd be wanting in, you know, Pages, Numbers, Keynote, that you're not seeing now?
Not really, to be honest. I'm actually very, particularly Keynote, I'm actually very happy with it. Don't want the friction. Just take the friction away, and I'll be a very happy camper.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I've had this conversation with a number of people, because as it's come up, you know, very often people say, I wish, you know, it's been so long since Apple's updated iWork. And I often will ask people the same question I just asked you, and more often than not, I get exactly the same response. It's like, no, actually, the applications work very well. They need some polish. It's not necessarily that I need some big new features. I know for a long time, the one thing you'd hear on Pages was it needs to have, especially on the iOS version, you know, better version control, better revision control. Mm. And they've addressed that a little bit. I don't know if they've pushed that as far as they need to push it yet, but I think for most users, it does the job now. Whereas it really didn't work at all before. But beyond that, you know, most people are exactly like what you're saying. It's like, I want more seamless integration, more seamless transition. I want documents in the cloud to work better and be integrated better. And if they can just do those things and maybe put a little polish on it, I'm going to be a pretty happy camper.
Yeah, I was thinking when you sent us the question, I was thinking, ooh, what do I actually want? Because I was sort of half expecting you to say, what do you think will happen? Which is a very, very different question to what do you want?
Exactly, yeah. And the more and more I thought about this, it's like, you know, we can speculate all day and look at the rumor sites all day and kind of get an idea of what we think Apple's going to do, but it's sort of like, for Apple, they're always talking about, well, we're all about the customer. We're all about the user. So I wanted to really throw it out there and say, what do we want? Like, if we were anything, you know, this is what we want. And most people are going to kind of fall within the parameters of maybe what Apple is working on. But I'm finding the answers to be much more interesting, I guess I'll say.
Well, I mean, sort of the thing, a few years ago, this would have been a much easier conversation to have. Because particularly iOS was missing these massive gaping holes of features. It was like, there is no copy and paste. How can you have an operating system without copy and paste?
Yeah.
You know, that's easy.
There's a lot of givens, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But all that stuff has been dealt with. And the only maybe, and I stress the word maybe because I used to think this was a big deal, but I've changed my mind. The lack of multi-user support in iOS. I thought that was a problem. I don't think that anymore because they're deeply personal devices. I'm not sharing my iPad with people. I don't care how much I love you. I'm not sharing my iPad with you.
Yeah, and as pricing goes down and there's more price points and options for people, you know, we've got more different models of phones and we've got a couple different iPads now and maybe some more to come. I think some of those issues sort of fade into the background. And as it becomes a mature product, right, you get hand-me-downs and you know, mm-hmm. multiple members of a family can have, you know, their own iPads. But, you know, still at the beginning, there are times I find that you know, I wish when my wife and I do share an iPad or something like that, that certain things could remain separate.
It would be nice.
But it's not a must-have, I don't think.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I don't think it's the must-have I would have thought it was a few years ago.
Yeah, interesting. But, you know, again, you and I are also coming from that Unix Linux world and used to having, yeah. Hey, it's just multi-account support by default. What's the problem? Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Well, and it is Unix under there. Deep, 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 deep under there.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool if we had a terminal app, but I don't think that's ever happening on iOS.
No, maybe some sort of developer mode, but I really don't see that coming to end users.
Well, cool. I appreciate you coming on and taking my question. Real quick, you want to let everybody know if they want to follow you online and see what you're up to, where should they go look?
I think the easiest is just go to bartb.ie, mainly because it means you don't have to spell my surname, which just makes life easier.
Perfect. Perfect. And you know, check them out on Mac Roundtable. I could get back on there. It's been way too long.
Me too.
All right. Take care, Bart.
Good night. Bye-bye.
So now I have Katie Floyd from Mac Power Users, also a member of the Mac Roundtable. Hey, Katie, how you doing?
A pleasure to speak with you, Adam. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming on this little sort of pre-WWDC show. We're doing a little different thing here. I already sent you the question, but in essence, I wanted to know if you were running things at Apple, if you were over the past year getting ready for announcing something at WWDC, what is the one thing that you personally would want Tim Cook to come up and talk about?
Cheaper coffee, because man, like $610,000 a cup. I mean,
good point.
We got to do something about that.
Well, that's only if you want to have it with Tim, right?
Okay. All right.
So you want cheaper, easier access to Tim Cook.
Maybe that's part of it, but gosh, that's got to be some really good coffee. on a more serious note, I guess, to get back around to your question, for more selfish reasons and more just because that's what the industry wants, I'd like to see Apple go ahead and do something with this Apple TV, but in kind of a different way. I don't want to see Apple produce a TV. Mm-hmm. I think that's foolish. I would imagine everybody listening to this podcast already has one, if not multiple, high definition, maybe 3D capable, all of these extra bells and whistles TV sitting in our living rooms with no desire to buy new ones. But I would really like to see Apple ramp up their game in terms of getting this partnership deals, getting the developer content, maybe introducing some kind of developer kit. We know they already have a developer kit to the Apple TV because they've introduced some third-party channels. It's just not necessarily a public developer kit. It's kind of for Apple and their friends. But I'd like Apple to really start building out both the hardware and the content piece to the Apple TV, because I'm a cord cutter and I still want that everything box. I mean, my media cabinet is filled with boxes now more than ever. and I like my setup, but I mean, gosh, I've got so many inputs and I don't even have enough HDMI ports to put together the stuff I had to mesh together to get all my content.
So are you getting it from multiple sources at this point, beyond the Apple TV, or is it that your sole content for that cord cutting stuff?
Well, I'll tell you, most of my content comes from over the air, HD. You know, most people, maybe depending on their area or their reception, can get some kind of free over the air broadcast. For me, I'm fortunate that I live in a suburban area and I can get all the major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, just with a $20 mono price antenna that I stuck in a window in my back bedroom.
Right.
And that's getting fed into a TiVo box. So I would say probably a good 80% of my content I'm getting from that over the air antenna, and then I'm time shifting it with the TiVo box. But the 20% else is either coming through primarily through an Apple TV or through a Mac Mini that I've hooked up to my TV. And then a small percentage of it is I had to buy this, you know, $50 cheapo Blu-ray player because there were a few things that the Apple TV still doesn't offer, like Amazon Prime streaming and things like that. But
right.
Yeah, the Mac Mini kind of does everything else, like Hulu, because believe it or not, some shows are on Hulu, but not on Hulu Plus. And, you know, regular network sites and stuff like that. So I would really like to see Apple start building out some of their app partnerships. And we've already started to see apps on the Apple TV start to open up. You've got the Wall Street Journal app on there. You've got Vimeo. You've got Netflix. I think some of those apps were very clearly built by Apple, or certainly Apple had, you know, their hand very – I think Apple had their hand – very heavily in the creation of all those apps, but I think some of them were flat out built by Apple.
Right.
But I think clearly there's a developer kit for Apple TV because we know these certain select partners have built it. There was this kind of odd announcement at the CW, I think the word is the CW's upfront, and the CW, for those who aren't aware, is kind of this B or C level network that does some shows. It's not a main network show. I get it as a secondary show to my ABC network on my antenna, but they announced that they're going to have an app on the Apple TV, and then like 40 gazillion different websites reported it, but they all reported it from the same source. I can't help but wonder whether that was a premature announcement. For a network to have an app on the Apple TV and it be this no-name CW network seems very bizarre.
Well, and the big thing on that story, if I'm remembering it right, was that they're going to allow live streaming or have the content available almost immediately after they air it, and it's not going to require any kind of access, because a lot of the services, you know, require you to have a cable subscription to be able to access the content, even though they make it available through their app or through a box or something like that. And that was the big hook there, right?
Yeah, and then what came out right about that same time is that ABC was updating their app with some live TV in certain markets where ABC actually owned the affiliates, but you did have to have the cable login in order to quote-unquote watch live. But,
right.
You know, ABC, for example, has always a much bigger network than the CW, has always been Apple's first partner. You know, ABC and Apple have always right. had this special relationship since the Pixar deal and, you know, Jobs. And I would assume that Lorraine Powell Jobs is now one of the primary shareholders in ABC now by virtue of that.
Right.
You know, they've always had this very special deal. And, I mean, I just can't imagine CW is going to have an app and ABC's not. I mean, ABC was one of the first to come out with their ABC apps for the iPad and then the iPhone. I mean, what I see kind of as the future of the Apple TV is expansion of this app platform. Let's get an ABC, a CW, a CBS. I mean, even CBS, which has been the long-term holdout, finally released an app for the iPhone now. Get some of these apps on there where, you know, let me watch the last couple of shows. Give me a link to the iTunes store so I could download previous episodes, if nothing else. And what I'd really like to see is, you know, give me, I mean, we've got all these pieces in place already. Give me some options via in-app purchase. You know, if I'm not a cable TV subscriber, let me buy live television via in-app purchase. CNN's got a great app on the iPhone and iPad. I would love to see a CNN app on the Apple TV because as a cord cutter, that's one of the things that I miss most is this 24/7 cable news.
Right.
I'd spend $4, $3, $4, $5 a month for CNN Live on my Apple TV.
Right. I think Wall Street Journal has a live piece on the Apple TV, if I'm not mistaken.
But it's only a couple hours a day type thing.
Right.
I've never been able to catch it live because I'm always out of the office at
work. The expansion of that. I mean, the thing I'm pointing to there is infinitely possible for that device to do that, and it, just nobody's really leveraging it. So I'm getting where you're coming from in terms of Apple, you know, really expanding the capabilities of the Apple TV. And I think you're right. It starts with Apple opening up some stuff to developers so they can start building apps for the Apple TV. And I've thought about the same sort of thing. So I'm with you there. The question, sort of follow-up question I would have for you, though, and something I've thought about a little bit, and I don't know if you've thought deeper on it, this is, if they do get all of these apps on the Apple TV, the interface, what's your thought on how to handle that? Because right now, even with the channels they have, to me, it just somewhat feels cumbersome.
Yeah, the interface for sure has got to change. I mean, if nothing else, you've got to have some kind of folder and some kind of category structure. I don't see that as a problem. If anybody can do an interface well, and I think we're going to see an upgrade to the iOS interface with iOS 7 at WWDC, Apple is. I mean, I even kind of thought that the Front Row interface was a better interface than what we've got now, especially if, I mean, this kind of has a springboard feel to it with the little, I mean, it's not exactly springboard, but it definitely has a springboard feel to it. I'm not worried about the interface. Apple can figure out the interface. I'm not sure as a next step, Apple doesn't need to open up to developers in the world. I think they need to definitely open up to select developer partners. In the future, yeah. I mean, we need to have an app store for Apple TV. We need to have Angry Birds on Apple TV. I mean, then it's really going to become a gaming platform. I'm not sure at this stage, certainly with the current version of Apple TV that we have, that the hardware can necessarily handle all that, and we don't have the interfaces for it. I think that's maybe still 2-3 years down the line. I think, you know, an ABC app, a CBS app, a CW app, an NBC app, I mean, those are no-brainers. Those are all things that could be done today and be supported on the current generation Apple TV hardware. Those are all things that you could have hooks into iTunes or hooks into purchases. I mean, those are all software-related things. We definitely need to do a hardware upgrade. I mean, the Apple TV is not going to be a $99 box hobby forever. Apple doesn't want it to be. I think that the folks at Apple are smart enough to know that as much as they all want us to buy, you know, $2,000 TVs from them, the average consumer is not going to buy a $2,000 TV from them, and they're certainly not going to upgrade a $2,000 TV every 3 years.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think Apple needs to upgrade the hardware. Personally, I'd like to see them. I mean, they've got the pieces already. Put a Fusion Drive in it because we need. I would like to see a tuner. So for DVR capability, go ahead and buy TiVo. I mean, TiVo's not doing anything. I mean, go ahead and do that. But, you know, put a tuner in it so I can hook up my antenna to it or hook up my cable subscription to it. You know, put a Fusion Drive in it so I've got decent hard drive space for fairly cheap because no SSD is going to, you know, give me the storage that I need for a DVR at this point. You know, let me keep my little second and third generation Apple TV boxes in supplementary rooms and then AirPlay to them. We've already got that piece there, and maybe they could be secondary little receiver boxes. And then as we go through different generations of this, you know, and as the hardware increases, then go ahead and open it up as an app platform. And maybe I've got Angry Birds or, you know, I don't even know what all the – then it really opens up as a gaming platform and you can add on Bluetooth controllers and things like that. I don't know that it needs to jump there overnight, but it's – you know, the possibilities are endless. If once you upgrade the hardware and then you're talking something in the, you know, kind of the current iPad price point, you get into a $399 to a $599 device and you get much more into a price point that Apple's comfortable with, something that Apple could build that box for, and something that people aren't going to mind buying one or two and upgrading them every couple of years.
So it sounds to me like you're saying it's time for Apple TV to grow up a little bit.
It is.
Become a little bigger boy, maybe move into the teenage years out of the infancy stage.
It needs to become more than a hobby, but Apple knows that if they launch it prematurely, if they don't have those partnerships, mm-hmm. that it's going to flop. And so they have to time it very carefully because I think it's one of those things. They've been dabbling with it under this hobby for a while, and that gives them some protection and it manages expectations. But, you know, I don't think that they can launch it with well, we've got ABC and CW on board, but we don't have Fox, we don't have NBC, we don't have CBS, you know.
Do you think part of that problem, last question I want to ask you about this, because I'm curious to get your take on this, since you've obviously thought about it. On the content piece, I get, like, it'd be great to do almost a la carte TV and have the in-app subscriptions for different channels and things like that. Do you think one of the hang-ups, though, is, like, if I suddenly have to manage and remember all these little bits and pieces for different bits of content that I have on my Apple TV or different apps that I install that, oh yeah, I have that one and I don't have that one. I guess under the app model, it might work where I just buy the apps that I want for the channels that I want. And that covers sort of my subscription fees or whatever, or I opt into the subscription fees. But if they're just sort of all preloaded on there, I have that problem with Apple TV right now. Like Hulu's on there, but I don't subscribe to Hulu. Right. And it's like, can I just like not have that, or I don't care about that, or so I worry about that a little bit. Like maybe Apple wants it to be simpler than I have to like have a bunch of apps or a bunch of subscriptions, and now I got to manage them and remember this one's that one and that one's that one. I mean, my apps on my iOS devices feel like that sometimes too, with all the configurations and settings and like where do I go to manage this stuff. I think it needs to be somewhat cleaner, especially on a, you know, a more of an appliance type device like a TV box.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's got to be clean and simple. But I really think in some respects, the app model is the cleanest and the easiest way to do it. Apple has already, they've already got partnerships with Netflix and Hulu, mm-hmm. where my mom just signed up for her first Netflix account. I bought her an Apple TV for, I think, Mother's Day last year. And until now, she's just used it as a screensaver for her TV and watched the pictures gone by, which in her mind was alone worth the $99. And then someone recommended House of Cards. So she decided that she was going to catch up on that. And, she, you know, she's got an Apple ID and she's got a password. And she went in and she, you know, signed up for Netflix on her Apple TV. And she didn't have to do anything. She didn't have to give them a credit card. She didn't have to do any of that. And
well, that's cool.
You know, we're seeing that on the Apple TV, you can do Netflix and you can do Hulu with your Apple account. And she got an email from Apple saying, no problem, we'll bill your Apple account $7.99. My suspicion is Apple's getting 30% of that, you know, with their deal with Netflix, because that's kind of been their thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that's how Apple manages it, is with the app model. And, you know, for example, just take the ABC.com app. You know, just even if you just took it in its identical form as it is on the phone, which is or the iPad or whatever, which is a free app to download. And then if you want to buy episodes beyond the, you know, five that are available from the last five that aired, you know, then those are $1.99 or, you know, $2.99 for HD or whatever it is, as though you bought them from iTunes. Right. Or if you want to turn on live TV, then that's an in-app purchase. I mean, Apple knows how to do that really well. So I see what you're saying. I mean, we've already got apps on our iPhone that we can't turn off, i.e., you know, newsstand on the iPhone and Stocks and, you know, whatever it is that you don't use anymore. So I think Apple needs to be careful not to preload it with a bunch of bloatware and junkware. But that's also kind of where Apple has the negotiating room from a business perspective, because that's what Apple has to sell, the space on the home screen.
Yeah.
You know, we'll sell you that space on the home screen, because I was reading already. I was shocked. You know, Tim Cook said at All Things D that Apple sold more than 13 million Apple TV devices. And that's the second generation. So that's the, you know, the little black hockey puck ones. Right. And I thought, well, that's great. That's huge. But what I didn't realize is how many that is compared to Roku. I always thought that Roku sold more boxes, but apparently Apple TV has a 71% market share of this kind of standalone box, and Roku only has like a 27% market share.
That's right.
I mean, now obviously game consoles blow that all away.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so that's what Apple's got the brand, Apple's got the name recognition, and then that's what Apple's got to sell, is that front page space.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. And again, this is all stuff. We're not, just to remind everybody, we're not speculating on what.
Yeah,
these are not predictions for WWDC. This is what, if we were in charge, we would want. Well, Katie, that's a great one, and I'm totally with you. I think it's going to happen eventually, but.
And the coffee thing.
Yeah, and the coffee, cheaper coffee. But so thanks for coming on the show and sharing your thoughts. Real quick, just let everybody know where they can find you and follow what you're up to.
Well, the big thing I do is I do the Mac Power Users podcast that comes out once a week. I do that with David Sparks over at MacPowerUsers.com. My personal blog is over at KatieFloyd.me, and everything else you can find me just at Katie Floyd, whatever, Twitter, app.net, anything.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Adam.
So now I have David Sparks, also from Mac Power Users. We heard from Katie Floyd earlier, and the Mac Sparky Field Guides. So if you haven't checked out his books on the iBookstore, you should do that, as well as the Mac Roundtable also. So hey, David, how are you doing?
Great. Great.
Good to have you with us.
I'm very happy with my new promotion to the head of Apple.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So same question I've been asking everyone. If you had been, you know, at Apple the last year and you were making the calls, what would be the one thing that you would hope would be shown off or announced at the upcoming WWDC?
Well, first, I just want to announce that, you know, I have doubled the size of the new Apple campus, and it is actually a spaceship. And I do have space for Adam Christensen on the ship.
Oh,
you
good.
Know, when the trouble arrives, we got room for you, Adam. But,
excellent.
But what I'd like to announce is the Skunkworks project that's been going on for the last year that nobody has known about. All those billions and billions of dollars, we took a big chunk of that, and now Apple owns the internet. I just want you to know. We have built more server farms than there are actual farms in the United States, and maybe even the world. We've got farms full of servers. Google, Schmoogle, it doesn't matter. You know, we have more server space than anybody has ever imagined. And all of that, we went to Yahoo and Twitter and Facebook and Google, and we hired away the smartest people about setting up server services, syncing. So now when you tell Siri to do something, it will answer you before you even finish the words. Everything that you own that's on a Google device is going to sync like there's no tomorrow. You own a new video, it's just going to appear everywhere. You want to sync a document, it just shows up. There's just no problem anymore. The big problem that Apple's always had with making these back-end services work, we have solved it. We spent a significant amount of our money doing it, but we've basically bought and paid for our future with this investment, because there's nobody that can compare to us now.
That would be a perfect world, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. It would be. I think that's Apple's current Achilles heel.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I take away from that, and that was awesome, by the way.
Thanks.
the takeaway I get from that is what you're really hoping to see is Apple telling us that they've doubled down sort of on the services stuff, and they're dealing with that part of their...
Yeah, but double down isn't enough. They need to quadruple down.
Quadruple down.
Because it's just really, I mean, they have to.
Do you think they could have done it in a year, though? Or do you think it's a bigger effort than that?
If I was in charge, they could have.
You would have whipped them into shape and hired.
There wouldn't have been a lot of money to give away to shareholders.
You would have scoured Silicon Valley and hired away all those Yahoo engineers and Google engineers and just about everybody you could get your hands on.
For the right price, they can be bought.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, it's it's funny because we're doing this sort of pie in the sky, you know, if what, you know, it shoulda, coulda, woulda, whatever you want to call it, sort of show. But it's a point well taken, right, is that Apple does have that kind of power that, you know, with especially with their cash on hand, there's a million ways they could spend this. I frankly think that giving some money back to the shareholders is probably a good idea, though, in the long run.
Well, I guess my point is there's enough money to do both of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, when Apple has a new server farm, first they had one, what was it, South Dakota or no, it was on the East Coast somewhere, I forget. But it was a big deal and people were talking about it, and every time they drove up with a new cement truck, Apple Insider did an article on it, and it seemed like such a big deal. Way, they're building a server farm. How come not building 10 server farms?
This was before the one in Maiden in North Carolina?
Yeah, North Carolina. That was the one, but then they're doing one in Oregon now. It's like, why is it newsworthy when they build a server farm? There should be so many of these things. I mean, this company is the biggest company on the planet, I guess, depending on which day you check the stock.
Right.
And they should just be owning this problem. It should not be an issue.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's your sense of why they haven't stepped up in a big way. Because I've given a lot of thought to this as well, and I don't know. I mean, you probably like me, you don't have an answer, but I'm going to ask the question anyway because I'm curious to get your take. But it does seem like that's the missing piece. And I talked about this on my show recently. They have the hardware down. They pretty much have the software down with, you know, some minor polishes and tweaks, but I think they're still way ahead of the competition when it comes to the software and the hardware. The integration is getting better and better, but the place Google is just mopping the floor with them seems to be services.
And frankly, Google's getting better at software faster than Apple's getting better at services.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
But I think the problem is there's not a champion at Apple for this problem. I mean, Johnny Ive makes great stuff, but I don't think he's sitting around thinking about server hardware.
Well, it's Eddie Q, right, who's in charge of that, or supposed to be in charge of that. You know, is he too focused on iTunes and media, you think, and not enough on sort of the core iCloud services?
Well, I mean, the reason I use Johnny Ive is because he's a champion. He's a champion of design.
Right.
And, you know, you could say that Tim Cook is a champion of you know, the product stream and all the things that he does that makes them a successful company. And don't underestimate the things he does are very important. But I don't know that there's ever been a champion at Apple on this issue. I don't think anybody's taken it that serious, and all of a sudden it is a big deal.
Right. I mean, do you get a sense that it isn't a big deal to Apple? Because I also, at the same time that I look at this stuff and I go, yeah, we need to be hype, you know, as fans, we sort of need to be hypercritical of it. But I have this feeling that internally, this is something. So what you're saying, you know, what you threw out there, I think is not that far-fetched, because I think internally they are very much seeing the bigger picture here that, you know, it's going to be the, as Tim Cook put it in the, you know, in the interview that he did recently, it's the intersection of all those things, right? It's the intersection of the hardware and the software and the services. When did he did that during the D conference?
Yeah.
You know, he talked about that a lot, and I was very excited to hear him talking in that way. And that says to me that they really probably have internally doubled or quadrupled or tripled or quadrupled down on this stuff. Because I think they do recognize that, you know, when all of these things come together, it's going to be truly amazing. And it really is sort of that trifecta, that one missing piece. And I have to wonder in my mind, too, why we haven't seen too much in the way of hardware and other stuff releasing yet is because they want to get all of those pieces together and working. And I think they could have had the hardware done a long time ago. They could have put out all kinds of products. But I think they recognize that they need to take the time and the effort to make sure that everything just works the Apple way. You know, it needs to all be seamless, not only on the hardware and software integration, but also now on the services integration more so than ever.
Yeah, and I also think I'm being kind of contrite. This is not easy stuff. I don't think there's easy solutions to it. Every company that's scaled up big, they have these periods. I mean, I remember the big fail well days on Twitter. And
yep.
I don't think it was a question of somebody making an error in code. They probably had great code, but just that type of scaling breaks great code. And then they had to figure out all the band-aids and rubber bands that you need to put on it to make it work.
Yeah.
And you just can't go buy that off the shelf, but you can buy the knowledge. And I think they should be doing more of that. And I think they should be spending more money. They should do overkill on this problem. But, you know, maybe I'm overreacting, but I do feel that that is something that they need to spend time on. And I, as much as I'd like to see an update to iWork and some of these other things that we're hearing about as a user, I just want the underlying infrastructure to be awesome, and I'm just not sure it's there yet. In fact, I can tell you it's not.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned sort of hiring the talent, because another thing that came out at the D conference, I believe, was that Apple's done 9 acquisitions. Was that what Tim Cook said?
Yeah.
And I don't think I can name 9 companies that they bought.
Yeah.
So what exactly have they been buying? You know, I think some of those were you know, not public companies, so I think they don't have to disclose in that case. So, you know, they're definitely up to some things, and it sounds like the fall is when we're going to hear about it. I'm chomping at the bit, hoping some stuff will come out earlier than later. But again, at WWDC, really what I'm expecting, and this is not, you know, this was not meant to be a, hey, what do we actually think is going to be at WWDC? It's sort of what we want. But I think when it comes to WWDC, it's going to be a lot about the software. And I'm hoping that we get at least some hints, if not some reveals, about some of the stuff they're doing on the services side as well.
Yeah, well, if he gets up and gives the speech that I just gave, I will literally take my shoe off and eat it.
Okay, will you get that on video? We'll put it on YouTube. And
yeah.
I want to see that. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But I the takeaway from that in my mind, though, is I do think that's the direction they're definitely going to be moving, and I think we're going to see a lot of this stuff happening over the next year. And I think they will be spending more money to sort of hire in some of that talent. But then at the same time, I'm cautiously optimistic about it because they kind of tried to do that with Maps, and they showed that they were a little green just in terms of figuring out the integration of that, which is another hugely tricky problem. And Google really has the advantage of coming from the services side, and that's all what their DNA is. Apple really doesn't have services in their DNA. And, you know, I get a sense, and, you know, I'm a developer, and I've done some programming and stuff like that. I get a sense, I don't know how much on hardware design is as easy, but I do think that software is probably a bit easier than integration of services. There's a lot of moving parts when you start working with services. Well, and it's a hard thing to do.
And the big handicap for Apple is they can't put anything out in a small, you know, with a small limited release and scale it up because they've got so many millions of users.
Right.
You know, how many, they keep bragging about how many people have signed up for iCloud. So any service they add to it is immediately going to get load tested beyond any simulation you could ever perform.
And no one believes them when they say something's beta.
Yeah.
Like Google, Google says something's beta, people are like infinitely forgiving. Okay. Cause Gmail was beta for like, you know, 20 years. I don't know how long it was beta for, but it felt like 20 years.
Yeah.
But you know, Apple says Siri is beta and people are immediately critical of it. Well, this is not ready because Apple doesn't do beta. That's not part of what you're used to getting from Apple. You're used to getting polished, complete, finished things.
But with the server stuff, you don't have a choice. You've got to put it out there and put it under a pretty big load to find out what breaks.
Yeah. Yeah. People don't believe them.
Yeah.
So they won't take that as an excuse from Apple for some reason. But Google can go all day and say, oh, it's okay, it's beta.
And I'm pretty sure the first iteration of Google Maps wasn't as good as the first iteration of Apple Maps. I mean, they're playing catch up with somebody that's been in the field for a long time. And there's going to be problems like that. And I think everybody's willing to accept it. But I think the big issue was speed and interoperability. I mean, just for an example, iCloud Mail. Did you know that there is an online rule set for iCloud Mail accounts? I don't know if you've ever looked at it.
It's
like, pretty terrible.
No, I haven't looked at it. So, like, setting up rules in the online version?
Yeah, in the cloud.
Yeah, like server-side, you know, like mail parsing.
Like I can, and they're very simple. Like, I think I can make one that says, if Adam emails me, send it to trash. You know, it's right. Like that basic. We're looking at the server-side rules for Gmail, and I think that's one of the best reasons to use Gmail, because the server-side rules are amazing.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this somewhat related to that, because another thing that I had read a piece, I believe it was Apple Insider, and I talked about it on a recent member show. It was a great piece that got me thinking about a lot of this stuff. And they sort of laid out, or it might have been Cult of Mac, I can't remember which article, sort of said, here's the possible two routes Apple could take. And one of them was, you know, hey, bury the hatchet. Don't play the whole global thermonuclear war thing. And, you know, go back to Google, who has great services, and just use their stuff. I mean, do a deal. And I think they used a War Games quote, which was awesome, which was just something to the effect of, you know, the only way to win at global thermonuclear war is to not play the game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, do we need to end this Cold War that Jobs started, you know, because that was under his watch, and we have Tim Cook now, and does Tim Cook go back to Schmidt and say, look, you know, we want to get this done. You guys are great at services. We're great at this other stuff. Let's just work together. And my conclusion was, I think we've gone past that. I don't think Apple will do that. But, I mean, in a way, that would be a smart move.
Well, I think that a lot of this stuff, I mean, my day job, I'm a lawyer, and I see every day how ridiculous litigation is and what a waste of time and money it is.
Right.
And so I think these patent fights need to end. They need to make a deal between them and just get over it.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point. I think in terms of providing this fundamental interoperability or the syncing service and servers, Apple needs to do it itself. And I think turning that over to Google is really putting your future in somebody else's hands.
Yeah, and that's really not the Apple way. So then the alternative to that, I think, is exactly what you proposed at the very beginning, though, right? It's just Apple needs to go out and just, they need to spend some money, they need to acquire a lot of talent, and they need to just hunker down. And I think they've probably done the hunkering down part to a certain degree, but they probably need to do a lot more of it. And they probably also they're going to have to find more resources and people, because this is going to be a huge thing. I mean, it's already a big thing today, but moving forward, I think it really is the future.
Well, I mean, if they don't catch up with this, they will get left behind on it. And as wonderful as it is to see Apple real successful, I'm not like doom and glooming that it's the end of the company. I mean, there's always going to be a market, and they have great products, but you know, there needs to be that parity in terms of online services. And I don't think it's there now.
Yeah. Well,
and it's better now. I mean, when you think about it, I remember what it was like using .Mac. And even though Mobile Me got that terrible reputation when it first launched, it was a little better. And I think iCloud's a lot better than that was. And so they're getting better at it, but not fast enough.
That's the exact point, right? Not fast enough. And the thing is if they don't do it quickly internally, they'll be back at that place where they are going to have to scrap all the work that they've done and probably go back to a Google or potentially Yahoo, depending upon, you know, where their future lies. Who knows at this point? It's gotten more interesting with Yahoo. But, you know, if they don't do it themselves and they don't do it in a big way and they don't do it very successfully, then they are going to have to dump their own stuff and go with somebody who can actually put something together that works.
And how embarrassing is that? You know, the biggest company in technology can't get it done right.
I think they can, though. Yeah. I'm very positive about their ability to get it done. And I think Tim Cook might be the guy to take them there, especially with the executive team he has now. I think, you know, the repositioning they did late last year, I think it's going to start bearing fruit. And you know, I think WWDC is really just where we're going to get the hints of what that is. But you know, through the end of this year and the first part of next year, I think is going to tell a lot, especially on this side of things, on the services side of things. So I'm positive to see what goes on.
Yeah. You know, my last point on this is I've always kind of appreciated the corporate arrogance of Apple to say, we're going to do it and we're going to make it better. And they've taught me over the course of many years that when they say that, they can deliver. And I just think they need to do that again.
Great. Great point. Well, thanks for coming on and chatting with us and taking a little, you know, pie in the sky look at what might be happening in Apple's future. And if people want to follow you, see what you're up to, check out your stuff, where should they go?
You can find pretty much everything you need about me at MacSparky.com. Also, Adam, for the listeners, we're starting a sale. Me and Brett Terpstra, who wrote the 60 Mac Tips with me, the 60 Mac Tips book.
Yep.
It's $3. And so that's only for this week. And it's a pretty good book. It's 60 different Mac tips. Almost every one of them has a screencast that shows you exactly how to do it. It's really easy to digest. And everybody who's bought it is telling me that it's helping them. So go check that out. For $3, you may find it ups your game.
Oh, absolutely. I have that book as well. And, you know, if you learn one tip, that's worth the $3.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and you're going to learn a lot more, I guarantee you.
Hey, Adam, one last question for you, though. For your room on the the new rocket ship.
Yes.
What color do you want the carpet? Are you a hardwood floor guy? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, let's go with some nice hardwood floors. We had these beautiful hardwood floors one time in a place I owned that were cherry hardwood, and they were a little soft, so they dented easily, but I just look at that as, you know, comfort, wear and tear. So they were gorgeous. So we'll go with that.
Okay. And just, of course, you know, because it's our headquarters, all the molding will be rounded corner, right?
Excellent.
Okay. See you there.
There you go. Some great insights and thoughts and ideas from some super smart folks about where we feel Apple should be focusing its efforts and should be heading. I have a feeling a lot of this stuff will be alluded to at WWDC. Some of the things might actually be items that are in there. But overall, this is a sort of bigger picture, I think, of what we think as a community Apple might be working on and sort of the place that they're heading to in the coming year. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. We've got more for you. I've got another 4 interviews to bring you on Friday. And I also want to open up this topic to you. If you have an answer to this question, you know, if you were in charge of Apple and were in Tim Cook's shoes, what would you have had the engineering teams and the smart people at Apple working on? If you want to send in a 3 to 5 minute, let's keep them brief and short, but a 3 to 5 minute audio comment giving your thoughts and insights, I welcome you to send those to me at maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline, although I think the hotline limits you to about 2 minutes. So if you want a little bit longer bit of audio, send that in via email, and I will try and include several of them in the Friday episode. So if you'd like to be on the MacCast and you have something to add to this conversation, please chime in, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say. Real quickly before I leave you, I do have a couple other things to mention to you. The first is our friend Gene McDonald from Smile Software. Smile's been a great sponsor of the MacCast. Well, Gene is actually running a little project of her own, and she needs our help in getting it off the ground. What she's doing is she's doing a program called App Camp for Girls. And what they're going to do is they're going to be running a camp program to teach app development to girls. And the idea here is that they will get women instructors and volunteers who work in the industry to help inspire girls and get them motivated about possibly pursuing careers in the software development and technology fields. And they're starting the whole program in Portland. That's where Gene's from, Portland, Oregon. And they're really hoping to expand the program, but they need to get it started. And so what they did this week is they started up an Indiegogo fundraiser. And so far, actually, day one, they've earned over $17,000. And they're looking to raise about $50,000 to cover everything that they're going to need to set up the program. That includes like legal fees, all the startup costs, marketing budget. They need to get a bunch of equipment and devices so that they can have things for the students to work with. And pretty much that's going to cover everything they need for the first year. And I've known about this for a little while. Gene's a friend. We've talked about it, and I think it's an excellent program, and I've thrown in to sponsor it. And I would hope if you have the ability and the interest, please just head over to the Indiegogo campaign. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com and pledge whatever you can. It doesn't have to be much, $5, $10, whatever it is. But aggregate, these things take off, and she will be able to put this thing together and hopefully take it global. I'd love to see this thing just become a whole movement and really take off. So check that out. And then also, the folks at Connected Data, the folks who make the Transporter personal cloud storage product, they're getting ready to release a big update to their software, version 2.0. And to kick things off, they've offered MacCast listeners a chance to win a free Transporter. Now, they're going to be a sponsor coming up in July, but they've got the new software coming out soon. And what they've done is they've simplified the user interface. They've added more drag and drop and right-click support. They've added in the ability to right-click and get a link to simply share a file via your transporter. They have more flexible sync options and also new mobile apps for iOS and Android. So it's a pretty big update, and they're pretty excited about it. And they've made this contest available open to anyone in the U.S., Canada, and all of Europe. And you have to enter by midnight Pacific time on June 15th, 2013. But if you just go to filetransporter.com/V2 for version 2, V and the number 2, MacCast, all one word, you can go there and you can sign up to for a chance to win a transporter. And this is exclusive for MacCast listeners. They're going to give one transporter away to a MacCast listener. So that's pretty exciting. And again, they're going to be a sponsor coming up here in July. And I've had a transporter for a while. They gave me one and I really like the product. I really think it's a great option, especially if you're concerned about privacy in cloud storage. It's a really nice solution. And you should go check out their website, filetransporter.com, and make sure you sign up for the contest. And so thank you to them for giving us a transporter to give away. Now I'd like to take a moment and thank all of my show sponsors for the month. Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also PDF Pen for your iPhone or iPad, as well as Text Expander Touch for iOS. You can get more information and details on all of their software by going to smilesoftware.com. GoToMeeting by Citrix. You can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use my promo code MACCAST. Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, MacBook, Samsung Galaxy S, or other smartphone is worth by going to gazelle.com. Squarespace, the beautiful and intuitive website publishing platform that allows anyone to easily create a professional web page, blog, online store, or gallery all on a single platform. You can try it free, no credit card required. Just go to squarespace.com. Use my offer code MACCAST6 when you sign up. Plus, you can use that same offer code and get 10% off any new account. So when you sign up for a new Squarespace account, use the code MACCAST6 and you'll get 10% off. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. And ShareFile by Citrix. Take all the hassle out of sharing and sending your business files via old methods like email attachments and FTP with ShareFile. You can try it risk-free for 30 days. Just go to sharefile.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter my offer code MACCAST. That's sharefile.com, and enter the offer code MACCAST. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MACCAST. A big thank you to you for your support, for listening, for staying subscribed. As always, I welcome your feedback. I welcome your comments. I also would really like you to comment on today's topic. So if you have a thought on that, just record an audio comment, attach that as an MP3 file, an AIFF file. You can even send me a raw GarageBand file, however you want to do it. Shoot those to maccast@gmail.com, and I'll try and get those on the next episode. You can also leave voicemail on the hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9, or you can leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MACCAST. And be sure to check out the website. There you'll find show notes and links to all the stuff that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MACCAST. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. If you'd like to follow me online, I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/MACCAST. You can also check out the MACCAST Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMACCAST, as well as find me on Google Plus. Just do a Google Plus search for MACCAST and you'll find the MACCAST page there. That's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.